Perceive Things Near and Far, written and read by Fresney, Fandoms Sherlock BBC and Gulliver's Travels, Warnings for Omegaverse, part of the Variations on an Equation series. Jim was a humnim, with a whinny and a neigh, he was mad, bad, and dangerous to know. The other hoonims called him Bad Horse. He was the equine of sin. Without an opposable thumb, he never left his home island. But given the devilry he got up with those nasty yahoos, he didn't need to. John of the Lilliputians had an opposable thumb, but given his tiny size, knew he'd never be able to sail the high seas, as he'd have wished for. Even if as a beta, he hadn't been expected to stay home and provide for his sister's children. He looked up at the night sky and imagined finding a star to navigate by. While Sherlock of the Brobdingnagians scorned such obligations to her sister Mycraft's growing brood. She scorned the court of the king. She turned her attentions to science. She lived her life largely alone in a tower looking at the light of the distant stars, and was largely mocked for her ways. The king said, "There's nothing left to learn," and that's all there was to it. Now one cold and winter-clear night, when the stars seemed close and the moon hung so low that Sherlock actually reached up her hands to pluck it down, she gave a weary laugh at her own ridiculousness. "Everything in this world is relative, my dear moon." She spent the evening writing her perceptions of distant mountains that were merely hills, and a world-encompassing leaf when held close to her face. She wrote of the stars in the sky. She wrote of the earth and the sea. She wrote of what was inside and what was out. She was an omnivorous reader with a memory for the absurd and the grotesque. She ended by writing, "Education never ends. It is a series of lessons, with the greatest for the last. S.H. She folded that sheaf of papers into an empty bottle of wine, which she stuffed well with a cork at the end. She tossed the bottle into the waves, saying, "And that, dear moon, is all the interest the world has in what I have to say." She went back to her tower and withdrew, in as dark a mood as she'd ever felt. The bottle floated on the waves. It passed by krakens battling waves and mountains of floating ice. A current almost took it to Hunim's shore, but at the last instant it spun west again, to land on the island of the Lilliputians. Now, it wasn't unknown for great things to wash ashore there, but the Lilliputians felt there was not that much that could be done about it. They'd only wash away again. John liked to visit these sorts of things when they came, so he set off in the morning, and by noon was standing in the clear shadow of the great bottle. It was vaster than any boat in the king's fleet. The writing inside the bottle, what John could read of it, thrilled him. He acquired pulleys and tackle, because for all its great size, anything could be moved with enough pulleys and tackle. He pulled it some little ways away from the tide. He told himself it was to have more time to read the words. He brought an axe and made a small tunnel through the cork, until he was well inside. He read what he could. He was fortunate that it was written on onion skin, but even as light as it was very heavy. Those words spoke to something hidden deep within him. They said, "Come if convenient. If not, come anyway." He told his sister that he was going on a journey. She looked at him as if he was insane, because where was there to go? But he set off. He brought food and water. He lashed wide, flat rafts to both sides of the bottle. He pushed it into the waves and set off. Now, he wasn't a sailor, but the bottle didn't require much in the way of handling. He figured he'd end up where he'd end up, hopefully while there was still food and water. Now, as it happens, the currents didn't take him to the land of the Brobdingnagians. A vast seabird, the size of the bottle, and three bottles beside, picked it up and flew a great long ways, until bored, it dropped the bottle on the floating island of Laputa. The bottle rolled and rattled, and by some strange fortune, landed in the very bush outside of Sherlock's tower. She heard the noise and came out. At first, she didn't see John. He was very small. And she was very large. But she had very keen eyes for small things. She looked at the very little beta in the bottle and said, "When all other contingencies fail, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth." She uncorked her bottle and pulled out her own papers, and with them John. Now, you might think it would be difficult for them to communicate, but this wasn't the case at all, for Sherlock had dedicated herself to observation of things near and far. Also, she had an excellent collection of magnifying glasses. She said very softly, "How is it that you come to return my papers?" John said into the sound tube that she'd put next to him, "That's a long story." He grinned. "They were brilliant." "Ah," she said, "that's not the normal reaction." She held out her hand, and John jumped barefoot into the palm of her hand. She drew him very close to her face and breathed gently. His feet were very tiny, and her hand was very big. But it only takes the smallest of things, something smaller than a cell in a blade of grass, for one beta to know another. She smiled, and he smiled, and so it began. Their great work into the study of very small things with large effects, and the perception of things near and far. The End.